Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome, welcome, welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio, and we have a fun one planned for you today. Joining us on the show, ESPN's Mark Kriegel. He'll catch you up to speed on the return of Tyson Fury. Of course, Tyson Fury taking on Tom Schwartz this upcoming weekend in Las Vegas for Tyson Fury. It's his first fight under the Top Rank banner, his first fight on ESPN Plus. Of course, a lot of things going on in the heavyweight division. Some juicy rumors in our In Case You Missed It segment with Anthony Joshua and an unconventional fight date here in New York. And of course, we have Eddie Hearn read some mean tweets. You're going to enjoy that one very much. But we have to start off the show with what we saw this past weekend at Madison Square Garden. No, not Andy Ruiz's stoppage of Anthony Joshua. Triple G return. He stepped into the ring for the first time in 266 days. Standing across from him was the man from Toronto, Steve Rolls, and it was all Triple G in this one. Rolls had his moments, though. Let's not get it twisted here. He landed a big shot there in the second round. Many say that he won the second round, but this fight was to see what Triple G had. I thought that he had a little bit more movement. I thought he had a good rhythm going. He had a good jab. He also went to the body more. He landed 16 body punches in just four rounds. He only landed 14 body punches in 24 with Canelo. Of course, once the fight was over, all things turned to Canelo at the press conference. I was actually at the press conference. I was able to get a question in for Triple G. Some say it was the best moment of the press conference. Here it is.
I don't know if you saw this tweet. Oscar De La Hoya tweeted after the fight, nice, with the thumbs up emoji. A comeback win, now fight a real fighter, win a belt, and I'll consider doing a third fight. Hashtag Canelo is your boss. Just want to see your thoughts on that.
He talks so much, he back talk, you know, he's, and I'm thinking about for what he said, Oscar.
Not really interested in what Oscar is doing, what Oscar is saying. You know, I'm not really interested in that at all. I don't really like, following men. You know, I'm not about following men at all.
So safe to say you're not going to tweet anything back?
Мне что, что ему написать? То есть, ну, вот его мнение.
What do you think I should write him back?
Maybe say, I'm my own boss.
You smart guy. What would you think?
I would probably say something back. Maybe, hey, I'm my own boss.
Come on. He doesn't know me. Forget.
Yeah, so had some fun with Triple G. There was a moment there where he looked through my soul. I think it was when I brought up the hashtag, Canelo is your boss. It was, you know, lighthearted moment, and I really enjoyed going to press conferences and asking all those questions for you, the fans at home. But obviously, everything, gearing up now, banging the drum for that third fight between Canelo and Triple G. I know DAZN wants it. John Skipper wants it. You know, and think about it. Between that third fight between Triple G and Canelo and the Joshua Ruiz fight on DAZN, that's, you know, maybe 3 month span where they can get a whole new subscriber base in there and get that going. But here we go. Our first interview of the show. Here's Mark Kriegel. Our next interview on Inside Boxing Live is brought to you by Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located just a few steps away from Madison Square Garden and Times Square. Go into Jack Doyle's for all your entertainment needs. From happy hours to birthday parties to private events, Jack Doyle's has you covered. Once again, that's Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located on 240 West 35th Street. Our next guest you can watch on ESPN telecast of Top Rank Boxing. You can read his work on ESPN.com. He's the award-winning, best-selling author, Mr. Mark Kriegel. He joins us right now on Inside Boxing Live. Tyson Fury Fight Week, and I read that he's never been to Las Vegas, which is a little bit scary and really hard to believe as well, Mark.
Never been there, vowed as a child never to go there, never to fight there. I never to go there until he was fighting, actually. So this is his not just his first fight in Vegas, but his maiden voyage as well. Hmm. We spoke last week, and he seems like the perfect character for Vegas. You know, he's definitely charismatic. He's definitely a showman, but. To me, you know, Vegas is built on playing the odds. That's what, you know, made the mob rich and the corporations rich after the mob. And Tyson is like maybe the least probable guy I've ever met. I mean, not that many guys fight for the title after losing, you know, 150 or so pounds. So I was kind of taken with him.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, the demons and the well-documented issues with, you know, depression, anxiety, and drugs to come back. A lot of people had him beating Deontay.
That's a trifecta right there. Depression, anxiety, and drugs, yeah.
That's a big one. And he came back from it. Many had him beating Deontay Wilder to get up off the canvas twice. And now here he is with Top Rank. You know, we might get that rematch with Deontay Wilder. They haven't, the Top Rank side hasn't confirmed it. But, you know, Deontay Wilder has said so. But, you know, talking to Tyson Fury, and you're going to have a three-part series. Look for that on SportsCenter as we enter into Tyson Fury fight week. You know, what are you, you know, getting from Tyson Fury? What are you, his mindset right now? Do you feel like he's in a good place?
I think he's in the best place he's probably ever been. Let me go back on a couple things you said there. I mean, you said that that's the big one. Was it depression, anxiety, and drugs, depression, anxiety? It's actually like a big three. Mm-hmm. And what he told me was that after he beat Klitschko, this is what he's sort of bred to do. The bottom fell out. And the idea that he's back here is extraordinarily improbable. Or B, I think that he's back here in a better place than he's ever been. He's the A side. I think that he surprised a lot of people with how he did against Wilder, and he's in a much better place than he was even certainly for the Wilder fight. His own dad told him not to take the Wilder fight. His original plan, what he told me, the original plan was to come back against, you know, four bums, his words, not mine. And he finished with two of them, and then he signed for Wilder. By the way, I think that Wilder fight is, as long as Wilder can get past Ortiz and Fury can get past Tom Schwartz, which he definitely should this coming Saturday night, that fight is on. But right now, Fury feels he's a lot better fighter than the guy who got up against Wilder.
Yeah, I can buy that.
In that moment, the whole division changes. The moment that he gets up, the moment. Hold on a sec, Mickey, get away from the door. My dog,
Mickey.
Mickey's my dog.
Nice.
He's protecting me.
There you go.
The moment he gets up, it reconfigures the division.
Yeah, and not only him getting up there, too. The feels like the division is being reconfigured on a monthly basis after we saw last week with Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua. And I know what the heavyweight division means to you, you know, covering, going back to, I think you said it was your first fight that you covered was Riddick Bowe against Evander Holyfield in 1992.
Oh, Holyfield, yeah.
Yeah, so I know what the heavyweight division means to you, and I know you know, what it means to boxing. And I feel like right now, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, what we saw with Andy Ruiz, you know, what we saw with Deontay Wilder, with his knockout, you know, safe to say, you know, where do you have the division right now? And it's always going to be compared to those golden years in the 90s.
I mean, look, in the 90s, we're saying the 90s were nothing. The golden years were the 70s.
Right.
You know, and so I think there's this, no sport depends more heavily on its own sense of nostalgia than boxing. If these guys, listen, if they fight each other, it'll be a golden age. If they don't, it'll suck. Right now, it looks like they actually might fight each other. And change this. Number one, the way that Fury fought Wilder. Number two, the upset victory over Joshua Ruiz. So that puts a lot of things into play. It makes Joshua's comeback fight, whether it's at the Garden or over in England, it makes it a very dramatic fight. It was almost like a gift. I don't think that Fury was likely to fight Joshua anytime soon. What was more likely was him to fight Wilder, despite the bad blood between Top Rank and the PBC. There is no bad blood, or very little left, between Disney and Fox. And remember, each of these fighters has essentially a corporate sponsor who wants this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the landscape has changed for Fury since the first fight. As I was saying before, when he came back, his own family told him, "You're not ready. You're going to get knocked out." His dad told him he was going to get knocked out. They didn't speak for 7 weeks. And his dad, as you know, was a fighter himself. Says, "You're not ready. Wilder won't beat you, but you're going to beat yourself." And we know what happened. In getting up, it was really the single most dramatic moment I've seen, and maybe since Foreman knocked out Moore. But he's much stronger now. You know, he's had more time. He's settled into his body. He's kept the weight off. I think he feels incentivized. He feels that. This title or a real reign is possible. When he talks of himself as a lineal champ, I don't think he's just BSing. He thinks of himself in that way. He feels that he belongs in a way that he didn't when in December of 18, when a lot of people thought he was cashing out.
Yeah, and I feel like Tyson Fury is a guy that he needs to motivate himself. You know, the plan, like you said, was for him to fight four bums, as he said. When he got past those two tune-up fights, and maybe he was like, you know what, I can't get up anymore for another one of these guys where I'm superior. I have to mentally get up for a big fight. And even if his own family, like you said, his dad telling that he's not going to win, maybe that's everything he needed. You know, same reason why he's constantly telling everyone that he's the lineal champ. These are little mind games that I feel like he plays with himself to motivate him.
Yeah, he's also the first guy, you know, he wins all the press conferences. And I actually think that means something. And with him and ask, what's the difference between Wilder and Joshua? Who would you rather fight? And Wilder, of course, because Wilder was more willing. But Wilder makes a better partner, a better promotional partner. There's something there. Joshua, you know, he says is. And by the way, last week's experience in New York did nothing to disprove this. Joshua was stiff and boring. And uninspired, and I never got a sense of passion from Joshua. And I've heard all the excuses that he may or may not have gotten hit in sparring, as I was talking with your dad. So what? When Tyson was the baddest man on the planet, he got cracked in sparring,
right?
And that he didn't remember anything after the fourth round. Again, so what? I remember Tyson saying he didn't remember anything after Holyfield hit him in the first fight. Did that diminish Holyfield's knockout? No. You have another player on this scene, who's Ruiz, who certainly for an American audience is easier to empathize with and less remote than Anthony Joshua. The other thing that's interesting in the lead up to this stuff is, to my mind, Wilder's taken a sort of like a heel turn. And you know, this whole talk about I want a body, it's like that's
very
terrible,
strange.
Man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like, come on, stop it. The most beautiful moment I've ever had as a reporter is doing a piece on Wilder. Here's a daughter with spina bifida, and at the end of the piece, the daughter comes up to us and says, "Want to see me do a cartwheel?" She gets right up in the ring, does a cartwheel. It's like you just wanted to cry. So it was a moment of great beauty. I really have a great affection and respect for Wilder. But I don't know who this I want a body guy is.
That's when Wilder turns into a different person. That's on Fight Week. If you take a look, you know, all the controversial things he says, you know, till this day, that outburst that he had Fight Week. You know, look back at the I want a body on the record. I was right next to him when he said that. Fight Week. He walks, you know, when he walked into that gym, he had his daughter in his arms. I don't know if it's the same daughter, but he had his child in his arms when he entered Gleason's gym. He gets all worked mm-hmm. up. Once the media gets in front of him, next thing he's talking about getting a body on his record. I mean, every fighter has to you know, turn into this persona. Even Tyson Fury does it. It seems like the only guy that doesn't do it is mm-hmm. Anthony Joshua. But I think that for Deontay Wilder, he just morphs into this heel, like you said, and it's only, you know, 2 or 3 days before the biggest fights of his life.
No, he you know what? I've spoken to him in between fights, and he says he dwells on it a lot. I think I'm going to kill somebody in the ring, or I hope I don't, or I hope it's been going on. This whole talk of killing someone in the ring has been going on for a long, long time. He's never made it explicit, I think, until I think it was the last fight where he said, I want a body.
Yeah, he said it right at Gleason's gym, and it blew up.
No, but I think it was before, he said that last year as well.
Yeah, right. But it wasn't on a camera. It wasn't, you know, said it in print. It wasn't like how he saw it on SportsCenter with him actually looking into a camera and saying it.
Right. But, like, I asked Fury about this, and there's three ways to go. Either, you know, you're trying to make your opponent scared, which means probably you're scared yourself in some place. B, you're doing it because you mean it, which is sick. And C, you're doing it to promote the fight and build a gate, which is slightly less sick but still sick. Fury thinks it's the latter. He thinks it's for promotion. He's trying to get attention. You know, Fury knows a lot of really tough guys. I've never heard fighters or tough guys say that. So he thinks he's just, in Tyson's words, he's become a media whore. And again, they have this great back and forth. It will not be an unentertaining promotion.
But in a way, don't you think Tyson Fury is a media whore as well? I think all fighters have to be. I mean, he went with Top Rank in order to get more money and get more visibility here in the States. Maybe he's not saying things as controversial as I want a body on my record, but in some ways, you know, he's out in front of cameras every chance he gets as well.
Well, I mean, I think that's different than being a media whore. If you want to get over in the job, if you want to truly succeed as heavyweight champion of the world, not a guy who holds a belt, but recognized as, oh, that's the champ, as the baddest man, however you want to parse it, then you do need some exposure. And the mm-hmm. question, and you do have a persona, and the question is, what kind of persona is that? I mean, I remember people disliking Holyfield, thought he was a placeholder, until he lost to Bo, that's when he became, you know, noble. In defeat, he became noble in the public's mind. That's when it first became clear how much of a warrior he was. I mean, you have great champions like Larry Holmes, who didn't have much of a persona, and without question, his career suffered for it. So he's very conscious of filling this big role. Is that making him a media whore? I certainly wouldn't put it like that, but it's part of why he got the money.
Right.
The other part is that, you know, Top Rank had a pile of money that was designated for Golovkin, and when Golovkin passed, they basically cut a deal with Fury. And I would say, I do think at this point that the money was better spent on Fury than it would have been on Golovkin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically coming off two losses, a loss and a half, however you want to characterize it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you bring up, you know, the fans' perception of who's the man right now in the heavyweight division, because, you know, the guys all have equal skill, or, you know, it's arguable, but... You know, it's funny because, you know, Deontay Wilder wants to be that guy, and you know, Tyson Fury certainly wants to be that guy. Anthony Joshua had the bulk of the belts. Then in comes Andy Ruiz, who I think right now is the face of boxing. As crazy as that sounds, I'm getting asked nonstop. I'm getting asked nonstop about Andy Ruiz. Mm-hmm. He's everywhere. You post an interview with him, it blows up. I've never seen anything like this. Obviously, you've covered the sport longer than I have. Mm-hmm. The current face of boxing, I should say, but you've covered the sport longer than I have. Have you ever seen anything like this? And it's just funny to me that, this three-headed monster that was Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, all jockeying for popularity, all jockeying for who's the best. In comes Andy Ruiz, who, you know, if you ever talk to him, you know, he's not going to say anything controversial. He's not going to say anything crazy. He just is going to go in there and pull off one of the greatest upsets. It's a new face in the heavyweight division.
Yes, I have seen things like this. I think if you actually go back and look at the history of the division, the huge upset is not the exception, but the rule. It happens once or twice every decade. Oliver McCall, Buster Douglas, Haseem Rahman, Lehman Brewster, it happens.
Absolutely.
And usually it's guys that the general public has never, ever heard of. And they go, oh, my God. Who is this guy?
Well, were any of those guys 270 pounds, though?
No, and that's the sort of the difference with Andy Ruiz. It's like, oh, the fat guy won,
mm-hmm.
and he went up against a guy who looked like a superhero. So that makes him a sympathetic figure, an interesting figure from the jump. He's a well-schooled fighter. He's not a big hitter. He's not a power guy. He's a well-schooled fighter. He's a guy who's been a fighter all his life, unlike Joshua, unlike Wilder, but like Fury. So my question would be, who do you, you've seen the game. Who do you think is most likely, who's the best? Who do you go with based on, let's say, we have a new big three?
I mean,
Or with Joshua, who do you like among those four?
I mean, no, it changes like on a monthly basis. I mean, Fury, I feel like, has the most sustainable skills. You know, he doesn't get hit.
Yeah.
He has the most sustainable skills. Wilder has the biggest punch, the equalizer.
Biggest punch I ever saw, by the way.
Right.
Biggest. I've never seen a guy, Tyson, Foreman, Shavers. Maybe Shavers, but it's a different kind of power. This guy can hit you like with his wrist at a crazy angle, and all of a sudden it's like you've been, shot out of a cannon.
I know. So,
it's a weird power. I've never seen anything like it. He's not a giant guy.
No, and Ruiz might have the best fighting spirit out of all those guys, and Joshua has the looks and the pedigree, the Olympic pedigree. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly very interesting. So I couldn't even tell you how to, rearrange that order there, but I'll tell you what, it is compelling.
I mean, if boxing matters, but here's the thing. All of a sudden, so here's this guy who was crazy, getting high, he was depressed. 2 years ago, he was a mess. And right now, he looks like, as you said, the most sustainable heavyweight of all. That's really interesting to me. It's really, really interesting to me. Because, if boxing skill really means something, and it, I don't know, in the heavyweight division, what you want more? You want power or do you want boxing skill? But if boxing skill really means something, he's got a huge advantage over everybody, including Ruiz, who can box his ass off too, except that, Ruiz is what, 6'3", 6'2", whatever he is, and he's not a long-armed heavyweight? You're talking about a guy who's 6'9", who has the longest reach in the division. Now, am I correct? I think 85 inches, that's the longest reach of anyone out there, maybe ever.
He's certainly a tough puzzle there, Tyson Fury, and he fights this weekend on ESPN Plus. The first fight, Tyson Fury on ESPN Plus. Mark Kriegel will be part of the telecast. Also, look for his three-part series on SportsCenter. Always a pleasure talking boxing with you, Mark. I look forward to checking that out on SportsCenter, and of course, seeing you on ESPN Plus on this telecast.
Thank you, Dan.
We are entering boxing's busiest season. It's the summertime and the fall as the second half of 2019 starts off. And we're going to start off, or in case you missed it, with some heavyweight news and rumors. Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz rematches down to two locations with two dates. I was over at the Garden this past week for the Triple G Rolls fight. Heard some rumblings now. Now, it's no secret that the rematch is going to go down, and in the contract, it calls for Anthony Joshua to pick and choose where he wants this fight to be. You know, the common thought here is that it would be over in the UK where Anthony Joshua has fought all of his previous fights. If it's going to be in the UK, look for it to land November 16th, which is a Saturday, in Cardiff, Wales. That would be the fight that I think that Matchroom wants. To, you know, it's the safest route. But Anthony Joshua has shown that he doesn't want to take the safe route. If the fight ends up in New York, Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua, they are throwing around a date that's a little unconventional in the boxing world. Friday, Black Friday, November 29th at Madison Square Garden. Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua rematch. Imagine that. You know, this is Anthony Joshua, who has spent a lot of time in New York after the loss. If you follow him on social media, you can see him riding a city bike throughout the streets. He went down to the West 4th basketball playground and was playing with some kids, and they were ripping him for losing to Andy Ruiz. Listen, if he didn't like New York, he would have been on the first flight out of here after that loss. The fact that he's sticking around and taking it all in, and doing so with a smile on his face, which is another controversial thing. Some people don't like the way that he's handled this loss. I think it's been great. But look for this fight right here, this rematch, to be in two different locations. Well, not at the same time, but it could potentially be in Wales, or potentially be back in New York City. I know that DAZN desperately wants this fight in a U.S. market. You know, I talked to John Skipper. John Skipper's all in subscription mode now. He wants Triple G Canelo 3. He wants the biggest fight on their platform, which is Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua, to be at 11 o'clock, not 5:30 in the UK. So look for this rematch to potentially be back at the Garden on Black Friday, which would be amazing. In case you missed it and you were lamenting about all the fights that are not being made here in 2019, the Joshua Wilders of the world, the Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford, the second half of 2019 is shaping up very nicely. I put this tweet together yesterday, just kind of when you put it on paper and you take a look at all the fights that can potentially happen here in 2019, a lot of these fights are signed, a lot of these fights are rumored and in negotiations. So you take a look at this. Obviously, Joshua Ruiz 2, that's going to be in November. Wilder Ortiz 2, that's going to be sometime in the fall. You got Triple G Canelo 3, which you talk to some people in the industry, seems like a formality for September. Obviously, Pacquiao Thurman has been signed, to go down the list. Spence Porter, I don't know exactly what's going up with Spence Porter. It was originally scheduled to be August 3rd. That did not happen, as Adam Konacki is going to be facing Chris Arreola at the Barclays Center. I expect Spence Porter to happen in the second half of 2019, maybe in the fall, maybe in November. That won't be a Fox pay-per-view. You got Lomachenko going up against Campbell, which is for a unification in that division. The fight is here, Danny Garcia and Mikey Garcia. That one is the loosest of all these fights. I mean, that one was a rumor, but I know that Mikey Garcia wants to fight, and Fox certainly wants to make it. Then we got a lot of rematches here. You know, you got Julian Williams and Jarrett Hurd, their rematch. That's going to be fireworks. Of course it is, because the first one was fight of the year right now, at least if you think that Ruiz Joshua maybe was the fight of the year. You got Harrison going up against Charlo. That's a rematch. That was supposed to happen June 23rd. Unfortunately, Harrison suffered that ankle injury. It looks like he'll be ready to go in December. You got Inoue versus Donaire. Come on, that's fireworks right there. Regis Progre and Taylor going at it for 140-pound supremacy. Then you got Jose Ramirez and Maurice Hooker, who were in New York City this past weekend. They did something very cool there in New York City, over right across the street from the Garden at Brother Jimmy's. They did an open bar from 5 to 6, where you got to meet Hooker and Ramirez, got to hang out with them, have some drinks. Eddie Hearn was out on the street. I saw him right in the corner as I got out of my Uber. It was his 40th birthday. He had a Corona in hand. He was enjoying it. He was having fun. But the heavyweight division also kicks up with Usyk. He's back in the heavyweight debut. I think it's going to be against Carlos Takam. And then can't forget about August 3rd, Konaki and Arreola. That, I mean, as long as that lasts, that's going to be some big time fireworks. Konaki throws a lot of punches. But I wanted to put this in order here. I wanted to get this on paper. Now, you know, maybe a lot of these fights don't happen, but we know that a lot of them will. And I'm really looking forward to the second half of 2019. Moving forward here, in case you missed it, this actually just came through the wire today as we record this on Monday morning. The Athletic has started a boxing vertical. There were some rumors circulating for a little bit about where, you know, guys like Coppinger, you know, where he was going to go, but it seems like they have their trio set. It's Mike Coppinger, it's Lance Pugmire, and Rafe Bartholomew. What a trio right there. Three guests of the show, three friends of the show here on Inside Boxing Live. Lance Pugmire leaves the LA Times, where he was an integral part of their boxing coverage. The LA Times was one of the only newspapers in America that had consistent boxing coverage, and I know that Lance was a driving force behind that, so it was probably a tough decision for him to leave. It's been there forever. But he goes on to a national outlet here with The Vertical. Rafe Bartholomew, if you haven't followed his newsletter, I think he's going to try to bring it to The Athletic. He does a great show with Brian Campbell over there at CBS. He's a great writer. And, of course, Mike Kopp at your sources. He's one of the best boxing journalists in the game right now, breaking news and doing so. So it's great to see. I mean, you got to pay $2.99 a month, but come on, that's well worth it. If you're a huge boxing fan, huge sports fan, The Athletic has certainly been making strides in all sports, and it's great to see them add boxing to their arsenal. So shout out to The Athletic for doing the right thing and adding this wonderful sport to their game. Finally, lastly, Adonis Stevenson. We got some great news from Adonis Stevenson. Speaks for the first time. He makes his first public appearance. He says he's back. He said it was a really long road from that brain injury that he suffered back in early December to Gvozdzik, and he said he had to learn how to walk again, he had to learn how to eat again, but he was very clear that he is back. Not as a fighter, though. I mean, you know, that's not going to be the case. Wants to be a trainer. I think this is a great thing. We can see Adonis Stevenson, you know, start the next chapter of his professional life as a trainer. You know, maybe he starts to find some talent there in Montreal and in Canada, and he, gets things going for him. That's absolutely great news to hear. Adonis Stevenson back up and talking and back in everyday life. Unfortunately, there was some other news that, you know, under this same umbrella of fighters getting injured, especially with brain injuries. It's something that doesn't get enough coverage in the world of boxing. We love the sport of boxing, but you know, this is like the harsh reality of the sport, the side that you don't want to really talk about, but you have to acknowledge. Zab Judah over the weekend fought Cletus Seldon. That was on Friday night at Turning Stone, 41 years old. Zab Judah, you know, there was a lot of questions about why he wants to take this fight, but as we know in boxing, sometimes these fighters are their own worst enemy. Sometimes these fighters don't know when to hang him up. He suffers a very small brain bleed, and there were some, you know, conflicting reports that, you know, he's fighting for his life. There was conflicting reports that he was in a coma, but everything that I've read today is that he's up, he's responsive, you know, he's got his kids with him. He posted a picture on social media to show that he was fine. I mean, it's getting ridiculous now. I mean, 41 years old, I understand he's got to make a living and he doesn't want to maybe step away. But, you know, it's getting to the point where we got to do something about this and step in there. But also, over the weekend in Mexico, Felipe Arcuda suffered a near-fatal brain injury in a 10-round fight in Mexico. He's in an induced coma fighting for his life. It's just stuff that has to be talked about, and it's the non-glamorous side of boxing. And Daniel Twitch, Franco, who obviously suffered his brain injury about 2 years ago fighting on a Rock Nation card, he has now sued Rock Nation. He has all his paperwork signed, all his ducks in a row, because he was talking about how Rock Nation did not do the right thing and did not support him, wouldn't even share the GoFundMe page for him. He is taking litigation with them, so hopefully he gets his just due, because this is part of boxing. Listen, you want to step in that ring, there's going to be some repercussions. So props to Donna Stevenson and Zab Judah, who are on the mend. The same for Daniel Franco. This has been This Week's, in case you missed it. He resides in England, but he's making his presence felt here in the U.S. One of the most polarizing figures in the world of boxing today, both at the fights and on social media, is Mr. Eddie Hearn, the perfect figure for our latest installment of Boxing Mean Tweets.
Walking around the city of London, thought I saw Eddie Hearn. Then realised after 2 minutes here that every third bloke looks and dresses just like him. Fair comment, I have to say. Like, we all look, I've got loafers, no socks on. This is a London thing.
That is the look.
It is. Eddie Hearn loves a turtleneck, the big jam tart. This is true as well. I do love a turtleneck. Am I a big jam tart? Probably. Yeah, no, I respect that as well. Lovely turtleneck there, Eddie Hearn. In no way does he look like a used car salesman. I am a used car salesman. I say that a lot because that's what I do. I sell things, you know? So I'm just like a used... Doesn't matter whether I'm selling photocopiers or used cars, I am a used car salesman. Do people really listen to this guy, Eddie Hearn, as if he's an authority on boxing? He's a spoiled rich kid. It's true as well. I am a spoiled rich kid. I was growing up around a huge amount of money. Sorry about that. Wasn't a lot I could do about it. But I do work hard, and I am an authority. So yes, Gaz, thank you very much. Eddie Hearn is that kid at school who had rich parents and had all the girlfriends despite being born with a d*** on his head. They got the first bit right. You know, I didn't actually have a penis on my head, but I did have rich parents and I did have all the girls at school. Yeah, that's right. Anthony Joshua will never fight Wilder because he will get KO'd and they don't want to kill the Golden Goose. Eddie Hearn knows what he's doing. I can't tell you how wrong you are. I want to gamble, and it is a gamble. People say, if Wilder loses, is it bad for the PBC? Fucking terrible. If Joshua loses, is it bad for Matchroom? Fucking terrible. That's exciting. Let's gamble. Sometimes I get so close to thinking Eddie Hearn is a good bloke, just trying to do the right by boxers and not a dickhead chatting shit, looking after number one. It can change daily. I think that's right. I think there's a real love-hate relationship with me. One day you might go, do you know what, I like Eddie Hearn, and then another day you might think, I can't stand that fat. That's it.
That is a wrap for another edition of Inside Boxing Live. A special thanks to our guest, Mark Kriegel, and Mr. Eddie Hearn for being a good sport and reading some of those mean tweets. Don't forget, this Saturday on ESPN+, Tyson Fury steps in the ring once again. Will Tom Schwartz pull off an Andy Ruiz? You'll have to find out. Thanks for watching. See you next time.